All right, let's kick it off as the program is underway. Today it's Flames at 5 Central because we've got Flames warm-up coming for you at the top of the hour. Flames, Nashville Predators, third and final meeting between these two teams this season. Your one-hour pregame show with Derek Lubo and yours truly coming up at the top of the hour. But right now, the one and only Chris Johnston, our Sportsnet NHL insider, joins us as he does every Tuesday and Thursday on the program. What's going on, CJ?
We got some trades, man.
We do. Well, let's jump right into it because the Maple Leafs, where you are in Toronto, have made one, and I know that the kind of status of Nikita Soshnikov has been one of those stories and conversation points surrounding the Maple Leafs for the last little while. He's now a member of the St. Louis Blues, a fourth round pick coming back to the Maple Leafs. So, what do you make of this trade that just came down about 15 minutes ago?
Well, I mean, it's a pretty low risk acquisition, I think, for the Blues. And you know, the biggest question with Nikita Soshnikov is whether he can remain healthy. I mean, I think ultimately that's what cost him of his position with the Leafs. You know, going back a couple seasons, he was a late-season call-up and you know, pretty useful guy, and he always produced well during his time in the American Hockey League. But it seemed that when he got a chance with the Leafs, he would inevitably get injured and miss time, and you've seen too many guys pass him by. But, you know, a fourth-round pick a year from now is, you know, obviously not a huge price to pay, you know, for, you know, still a winger 24, you know, a player that could certainly fill a bottom six role in St. Louis. And, you know, I do think that it's a risk worth taking for the Blues.
He, and in a lot of ways for Soshnikov, just kind of got caught up in a numbers game in Toronto, hey?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's funny because part of the reason this was such an issue is that the Leafs were dancing around his latest injury and when they would activate him, and you know, we all knew that a move had to happen, and I think that's probably one of the bigger reasons why they could only get a fourth round pick for him. I mean, that and the fact that he hasn't played too much this year because of injuries, and the market would be somewhat limited. But you know, everyone knew the Leafs were at 50 contracts, so they couldn't even claim the player on waivers if they liked, and you know, they obviously couldn't acquire two for one. You know, that they're pretty limited, and you know, this was the best deal they could get while backed up in a corner.
And then the other deal that happens like right afterwards, a deal between Ottawa and Chicago, as Chris DiDomenico is heading to Chicago. What can you tell us about that deal?
Well, it's another sort of low-risk one. I think for Ottawa, there's a priority here to get Billy Poka from Chicago, a defenseman who really hasn't panned out, you know, was once you know, thought of pretty highly and you know, hasn't developed into an NHL type of player. But, you know, with the trade of Dion Phaneuf this week, and I think, you know, still the outside possibility the Senators could deal another defenseman yet before the deadline. You know, I think it's really just a depth move for them. They actually lost DiDomenico on waivers to Tampa earlier in the year and ended up getting him back. But, you know, he's kind of a unique story in that he never played in the NHL until late last season when Ottawa signed him out of Switzerland. And he came back and, you know, he's played 30 games or so. But, you know, I think it's basically an AHL trade for Chicago and for Ottawa. You know, gets them a little bit more on the blue line just in case other moves are to come.
And, of course, the trade that kicked this all off was the one on Tuesday night. And looks like both guys are going to now be able to make their debuts for their new teams, of being Dion Phaneuf and Marian Gaborik for the Kings and Senators, respectively. I know there were two other players in those deals. So the Kings get Phaneuf and Nate Thompson, and the Ottawa Senators get Marian Gaborik, and they also get Nick Shore. I guess the background and the inner workings of this trade, what have you been able to garner as to why these two teams ended up coming together on that one Tuesday?
Well, I mean, first from LA's standpoint, you know, that there really aren't that many defensemen out there to get, and you know, they've had and needed that position that they've identified really from the start of the year. And you know, Marian Gaborik was at a place at this stage of his career where he wasn't playing much of a role for the Kings. So, you know, they were able to take advantage of the fact that, you know, I think Ottawa is willing, is in that position where they want to try to make some cost-cutting moves, that, you know, they're trying to get ready for the anticipated contracts coming down the pipe here of, you know, hopefully Erik Karlsson in their case, but certainly with Mark Stone, potentially Matt Duchene, you know, players that could all be extended this summer. And you know, with Ottawa, look, you know, in a mood to try to clear out some salary, they are able to come together on this one, Gaborik and Phaneuf each having 3 years beyond this one on their deals. So it's far from a pure hockey trade, you know, but if you're looking at it from LA standpoint, Phaneuf comes with a nearly identical cap hit to what Marian Gaborik had because the Senators kept 25% of his cap commitment, and they get a defenseman that can, you know, be used certainly in their top six, but potentially in their top four, based on how he's lined up here in their first couple of practices. And, you know, they're really doing it without having to remove anything futures-wise or really impact players today. You know, and the Senators, as I mentioned, I think this is part of a longer-term strategy to try and sign Erik Karlsson, to keep him in Ottawa, and to free up the money that's going to be needed for a little bit of a reboot here, as, you know, I expect the Sens still to be active before the 26th.
And we're talking about, when talking about the Senators, it's less about cap room, because there's very negligible cap savings for them. This is actual money that they're wanting to free up, right?
Exactly. I mean, it's $4.7 million they've saved over the life of this deal, you know, immediately after making it. If they end up buying out Marian Gaborik this summer, which, you know, it's not something they've indicated they want to do, but it, you know, might make sense for them. You know, once they evaluate things a bit more, the savings would go up over $7 million versus what they would have paid just having Phaneuf on their roster. So, I mean, it's not nothing in actual dollars. And, you know, look, I think a lot's been made of the financial viability of that team and you know, Eugene Melnyk's position. But, you know, he's on record earlier this year saying that their payroll was too high and that, you know, they weren't in a position where even if they sold out their building, they'd be able to make money based on where the payroll was. So, you know, it's with the season down the drain and them now looking to the future, I think, you know, part of the priority in any move they make will be, you know, trying to make moves that put a positive, having a positive impact on the bottom line. And you know, I don't think that they're certainly not planning to burn it to the ground, but moves like this one where Dion Phaneuf is clearly a diminishing asset at age 33 and still was owed a fair bit of money, you know, this is a positive move for Stone and Pierre Dorion's shoes to try to keep his owner happy.
Mm-hmm. Is it worrisome at all that we're talking about a Canadian team that, you know, is on such a tight internal budget like the Senators are? Because that and I know that Karlsson is the number one priority right now, but most Canadian teams are spending to the NHL's cap, not their own internal cap.
Oh yeah, I mean there's certainly concern. I mean it's not a high alert concern at this point, but of the seven Canadian teams, there's no question the one on the shakiest footing is the Ottawa Senators from a financial standpoint, and probably the biggest move of any of them, and it's not going to get huge headlines, but is the fact that Tom Anselmi, the CEO and president, a year into the job, stepped away and you know resigned from his position with the Senators. I mean this is a team that struggled on the business front. You know, they don't shy away from the fact that they have to make improvements there. You know, we all know they're trying to get a downtown arena, which they believe will help revitalize their franchise and you know, maybe get more people in the building because it is, you know, quite a hike to go out to Kanata where they play their home games. And, you know, they've not done a good job of selling tickets. Obviously, any team that struggles the way they have, especially after, you know, going to Game 7 of the conference final last year, you know, some of the enthusiasm, or a lot of the enthusiasm, is going to be sucked out of the marketplace. But, you know, Ottawa needs to get on better footing. And, you know, some of it will come from the business initiatives. I think some of it will be tied to the performance of the team. But it is a tough position. You know, Eugene Melnyk has said repeatedly that he's in it for the long haul. And you know, he doesn't seem to be sounding too many alarm bells. But there are some worrying trends and concerns around them. I mean, I don't think they're a candidate for relocation or anything. I don't want to be too alarmist here, but you know, certainly when you compare them to the other Canadian markets, it's nowhere near as on strong footing as what you'd see in Calgary, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Vancouver, Toronto, Montreal.
With Chris Johnston, who is with us every Tuesday and Thursday, our Sportsnet NHL insider here on the Big Show for Metro Ford. From an overall trade perspective, so the LA-Ottawa deal gets made on Tuesday, Sens make another minor deal today, Leafs send Soshnikov to St. Louis. Is this the beginning? Are you expecting a pretty busy next 10 days or so before the deadline?
I would think so. I mean, history tells us that tends to be the way it goes. And, you know, if anything, we've seen the biggest moves at the deadline period, you know, recently come in the days or even a week or two beforehand. And then we're now in that sort of sweet spot. And, you know, I don't think that, for example, any of the moves we've seen so far will, you know, on their own trigger all the dominoes to fall. You know, we haven't seen a player yet move that you might have multiple teams bidding on, you know, someone like a Rick Nash, you know, Evander Kane potentially, you know, some of the larger name rental pieces that we all expect to move. But, you know, this is the start. And, you know, especially looking at the Central Division teams as the Blues are there, you know, there's a number of teams in that division that are looking to add forward. You know, I think Nashville, we still have our eyes on them to see if there's one more move in David Poile to strengthen their chances of getting a Stanley Cup team. Like Winnipeg, is anxious to make some moves. I mean, there's certainly the conditions now, I think, to see some trades and hopefully now that we got a couple even minor deals that will shake the market free, because I think we all like this time, and we've done a lot of talking about what might happen. I do finally think we're arriving at the period where we're some of it's actually going to come to fruition, and we can really hash over the actual moves themselves.
I sure do find that interesting, because every year there's kind of the consternation about the actual deadline day itself, and everybody's like, when is the year that the two major networks are going to just roll out 14 hours of coverage and have nothing to talk about? And every year, even though we haven't seen a huge amount of blockbuster deals, every year we're still talking about 15, 20, 25 deals being made in one day. So every year, even though we always seem to wonder if this is the year it's going to happen, it never seems to come to pass.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. I mean, there's almost like the seven stages of the trade deadline. And one of them certainly is when everyone starts to look around and go, oh, man, nothing's going to happen. And, in this case, usually something happens. And, I don't know that we'll ever see an armistice between Sportsnet and TSN and having, less coverage on that day, because, let's face it. I mean, it's about the trades, but it's almost kind of like an unofficial holiday during the hockey season. It's a chance to really take stock of where the league is at. And, sometimes when you got to fill a bunch of air times, you can look at what's going on. And it is a point to where I think the playoff races come into pretty good view once you flip over from late February and into March. So, it's a fun day. I think if you take it in stride, it's a stressful day, frankly, for a lot of people in the game. I think it's tough on GMs and executives that are, analyzing potential moves and in these conversations and working the phones and certainly for the players who even don't get moved but are concerned that it could happen. I mean, it's not the easiest time of year for them. But that's part of the business of the game. I mean, that's why a lot of these guys get paid millions of dollars. It's not a normal sort of work situation like most mm-hmm. of them have. And, I think it's still ultimately good for the sport to be talking about this stuff. I mean, it's fun, it's entertaining. And let's face it, none of us truly know what's going to happen. There's still that element of surprise, and there'll probably be a move or two that at least shakes the ground a little bit that nobody truly saw coming.
Chris Johnson's with us. Our Sportsnet NHL insider joins us every Thursday on the program. Okay, let's shift gears to the Olympic side of things. Team Canada takes a 5-1 win over Switzerland to open up the men's side of the tournament. Just your first look now at Team Canada from an Olympic standpoint, your initial impressions as they win 5-1 this morning.
Well, I was impressed, full stop. I mean, that looked like a pretty complete team, and not one that's sort of been cobbled together from here, there, and everywhere. And especially when you see the team from Russia lose its opening game, the Americans lost their game to Slovenia. There's sort of that idea that you don't truly know what these teams are and what we're going to get. But that was a pretty organized Team Canada, and I think that group clearly benefited from the fact that they spent 10 days or so in Latvia with a sort of a pseudo training camp and played some exhibition games there and played one more against the Swedes once they got to South Korea. And, that looked like a team. And, I'm encouraged by what we saw. Derek Roy was everywhere, former player that still isn't that old, that, could be someone that is a candidate to come back to the league at some point if he has a strong tournament here. I do think there's a possibility we see one or two guys. I'm not sure. I mean, it's a tight window in terms of having them, someone sign, before the trade deadline, so they're eligible to play, prior to the, in the playoffs this year, but certainly for next year. And, I thought that Team Canada looked organized and we're pretty good in that game. I mean, Switzerland's a team where they do have players that play together a lot of the year. That, obviously they're missing NHLers too, but they wouldn't have had a whole team of NHL players. And that's not always the easiest task when you're playing teams with more built-in familiarity, but Canada did well. They look good, and we'll see where they go from here.
I know there's been a lot of talk about you know, what this tournament's going to look like, minus NHL players. You know, I've been able to catch a good chunk of the action so far. Canada, Switzerland, I watched a lot of Sweden, Norway. That USA-Slovenia game was quite interesting and a fun little upset there. You know, any takeaways from the first few games of the men's tournament as a whole in terms of the caliber and what you've seen?
Well, the games have been fun. I mean, there's a lot of emotion in them. And you can tell that the people playing them, that it means a lot to them, you know, where they're playing and on the stage they're on. I think the first few games of the tournament have been exciting, and we've seen surprises and upsets. And, you know, there's still a pretty high expectability as to what's to come, you know, which team we would label the strongest. I mean, maybe Canada's a little bit more in that picture than some might have said before we'd seen the teams play, because, you know, and judging by a lot of the commentary, you know, I've seen, you know, everyone seemed to think that Russia was going to cakewalk to the gold medal, and, you know, they still might. I mean, we've seen the Team Canada's with NHL players lose a game here or there.
Yep.
And still win, thinking back to Salt Lake City, for example, and still come back and win in the tournament. But, you know, I really think it's going to be compelling, and especially if this Canadian team is as good as it looks, and if they can get on a roll and, you know, play into some big games, I think that a lot of people will be watching. You know, I haven't seen any numbers or indicators yet about how much the first game might have, you know, made an impact today. But, you know, I do think that it's something that will build as it goes along, especially if the Canadians have success. And, you know, like yourself, Pat, I'm going to be watching, just not out of duty or work, just because I'm curious too.
And I really, out here in Calgary, it'll be a little later in your neck of the woods, but if Canada makes it to the gold medal, it's next Saturday. It's a 9:10 p.m. start in Calgary. I mean, it's a little later in Toronto, just after 11 o'clock your time. But I can imagine the bars will be pretty jammed for a later night game if Canada's playing in the gold medal game, regardless of the fact there's NHLers or not.
Well, so I didn't realize it was Saturday. I mean, that's gonna help them as well. And, you know, the times, it would be tougher in the Mountain Time Zone. But, you know, the game today started at 7 a.m. Eastern time here, which is, you know, not it's not as bad as maybe some people had feared or worried about heading into the tournament. And then, you know, the game tomorrow is 10 p.m. local time here, 8 where you guys are. So it's not impossible to follow. I mean, it's not certainly as convenient, I guess, as it might be. But I remember when the NHL was negotiating about potentially going there, that one of the sort of stated things was, well, no one's going to see these games in the middle of the night. But, you know, for the most part, I do think that there's a window there for fans to watch. And if there's a Saturday night gold medal game, even starting at 11 o'clock in the Eastern time zone, I think that will be a big hit for people. And, you know, I really do think the country's going to get behind Team Canada, even if, you know, it's not the version we're used to seeing at the Olympics.
Final thought for you, and that is on the women's side, because another outstanding chapter in that Canada-USA rivalry last night. It was tight. It was a lot of fun. It was hotly contested. And I'm glad that, you know, south of the border, they've started to take notice, I think, on NBC even, that, you know, this is one of the great Olympic rivalries, and we saw another chapter last night. We'll probably see another chapter in a few days when they play for gold.
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, I love that. Literally, one of the best hockey games that I've covered full stop ever is the gold medal women's final in Sochi. I mean, just in terms of the stakes involved and what it meant to the people playing the game, and obviously the dramatic way Canada was able to rally and win the gold medal after having a puck go 100 feet and hit the post of an empty net and somehow stay out. I mean, that was a night I'll never forget, just, you know, professionally being at a game. And it's great. I mean, I know that there's a few ways of looking at this, and I've seen a lot of people over the years bemoan that, you know, the other countries aren't at a level where there's truly like a legitimate number three team at this point to challenge the two heavyweights of the sport. But I mean, the fact we have two heavyweights, they're obviously a geographic rival. And you watched the caliber of that game yesterday. I mean, it was tremendous. I don't know how, if you love hockey, you could not watch that and enjoy it. And, you know, I only managed to catch the third period after covering a Leafs game here in Toronto last night, but man, I mean, it was tense, and Canada gets the goal called back, and then you go into the final minute, and the U.S. is all over the zone, and I mean, that's everything you want out of playoff type of hockey, and the stakes are pretty high over there for, you know, for these women that have been training for 4 years, essentially with, you know, it in the back of their minds that very likely we're going to be talking about a Canada-U.S. final. So, you know, I hope that actually plays out, and we get to see these teams play again with everything on the line, because that was a pretty good appetizer last night.
this kind of weird for you? Because you've covered the last two Winter Olympic Games in the hockey tournaments. Weird for you that you're not in South Korea right now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm full of, I guess, jealousy for my colleagues that are over there. I mean, I love the Olympics. I think it's a great event. I'm just being selfish. I'd love to be there to experience it and soak it all in. It's bigger than just a hockey tournament, even though, you know, when I've been at the two games I was at, I was covering the hockey tournaments, men's and women's side. But you get a feel for everything going on, and there's an excitement and you know, even the other sports. I mean, it's a really unique environment. And, you know, from everything I've seen from my buddies on social media that are over there, it looks like everyone's having a good time. And I'm sorry that I'm not a part of it. And I think that there's, there's a number of people associated with the NHL that aren't happy with it. Talked to Victor Hedman about that this week. Mike Babcock said it at one of his press briefings. I mean, anyone who's been there, I think, knows what it is and knows that you can't replicate those feelings very much, even in the playoffs or what have you. And, you know, it's too bad the NHLers aren't there, but the life goes on, and then the sports are still great. And I get the feeling the country's still watching pretty closely.
Well, as we wrap up, last time around when you were on your way back from Sochi back to this part of the world, I called you and I did a pre-taped hit with you, and you were in Germany at the time. And I remember calling the Westin Hotel where you were. I think you're in Berlin. And I remember calling, and it was one of the most terrifying moments of my life, because the lady answered in German, and I was like, oh no, what do I do? So there was like 6 seconds of silence because I was frozen. And then I was like, I'm sorry, do you speak English? Because I had no idea what to do. And she's like, oh, of course I do. Who would you like to talk? I was like, oh, thank God. Because I was like, how am I going to get a hold of Chris Johnston if I can't talk to the lady at the front desk? So we got
a great memory, Pat. I was there. I spent the night in Frankfurt on the way back. And I don't remember doing a radio show, but I'm sure I gave you my best. I was probably dead at that point.
Oh, you were money. You were money. And nobody does usually remember doing a show with me. So don't feel bad. Good stuff, CJ. As always, an absolute pleasure. We'll do it again on Tuesday. Thank you, brother.
All right. Enjoy the Preds game tonight.
We will. He's Chris Johnston from Sportsnet. He's our NHL insider. He joins us every Tuesday and Thursday here on The Big Show and the Flames at 5.